To begin, some excerpts from Dean Martin's song, How Do You Like Your Eggs in the Morning? How do you like your eggs in the morning? I like mine with a kiss. I like mine with a kiss. Boiled or fried, I'm satisfied as long as I get my kiss. How do you like your eggs in the morning? I like mine with a kiss. Up or down, I'll never frown. Eggs can almost be bliss. Just as long as I get my kiss. Hello, and welcome back to the third installment of my brand new podcast, All About the Egg. Today we're going to explore a bit more of the grand egg industry. We're going to finally get to start picking apart the process of egg grading. And we're going to go over how you, yourself, can become a USDA-licensed egg inspector. I've also been able to wrangle myself an interview with a real-life egg chef. I'm going to talk to him about his egg cooking preferences, both at work and home, and get a little insight into how his work has an impact on the egg industry. Now, I believe I briefly mentioned in the last episode, I've been trying to get in touch with a number of egg farms and local egg producers in my area to hopefully get some more insight into their processes and how they farm the wonderful white ball that we know as the egg. I guess more of an oblong ball. But I've not really been getting a lot of my calls returned, which is unfortunate. So I will unfortunately have to go and do my own digging and my own research on this. But we will get to that on the podcast in due time. And before we begin, I'd also like to take a few minutes to bring you up to speed on my personal life. So the court cases are still proceeding. The investigation is still proceeding. Now, things haven't been quite as good as they were a few weeks ago. As I'm sure you're aware, in case you're a new listener, I am currently a number one suspect in the investigation into my ex-wife's murder. I do maintain my innocence and have been still fully cooperative with the police throughout the investigation. It is still ongoing. I believe they're starting to wrap it up and put together a conviction, but they have recently come across what they consider to be irrefutable evidence that almost guarantees me being the murderer. I won't go into specifics about what they found, but I'm just going to say that I still maintain my innocence and had nothing to do with that murder. And I will be innocent until proven guilty before the law. Additionally, my attorney, Steve, unfortunately is no longer my attorney. We decided mutually earlier this week, I should add not so amicably, that Steve would no longer represent me in this case. I've decided instead to represent myself in court and in the talks with the police, as I feel that's the better option for me at this moment. I feel confident enough in myself and my case that I can take this on and beat it with no issue. I feel as though I'm sort of being singled out in this situation and being treated extremely unjustly. And a note to Steve, if you're listening, which you probably still are, I know it's you spreading those rumors about me. I have friends in some very high places who apparently have more regard for me and my character than they do yours. And if this keeps on, I am fully prepared to take you to court after I beat these murder charges. I'll go for the throat, and I'll be going for everything you have. And the same applies to Ron and Denise. You two keep running your mouths and see what happens. So, egg fans, the other bit of bad news I have to share is that my girlfriend, Jill, as far as I know, is dead. Or at the very least, she is currently declared a missing person. Now, you may remember in our interview on the podcast last time, we were up in the Endless Mountains in Pennsylvania just a few weeks ago, and we went on a hike on our during our vacation out there. We hiked our way up a mountain and stopped at, there's this really nice overlook that overlooked a huge valley. And I don't know how else to say it, but Jill was kind of pushing her luck next to this cliff. And I guess she was just trying to get out towards the edge. She was kind of like edging towards the cliff to get a picture or something or see better. I'm not really sure what. But she lost her footing and took a little tumble. Now, at this moment, I was actually peeing in some bushes like 50 feet away, so I didn't even see this happening. Otherwise, I may have been able to help. But unfortunately, the cliff was about 150 to 200 feet tall, so I was having trouble getting a good view through the tree leaves down below to see where she might have even fallen. But eventually, I was able to make my way down to the base of the cliff to try and find her. And I had no luck. And I tried for like a good hour and a half, 2 hours. Couldn't find her. And this wasn't even like a preservation or public park or even game lands, like state game lands where you can hunt. It might have been private property, thinking back, but honestly, I'm not too sure. We were truly in the middle of no place. And I didn't have any service on my phone, and no idea where I was at. I did manage to eventually find my way back to the car, and I just drove until I had service to call the authorities. I did file a missing persons report for Jill with the state police, but didn't really have any information to give them about the specific location we were at the time of her fall. Now, this is an ongoing thing, so I will provide you more information as it comes. In the meantime, if you do ever find yourself somewhere in the endless mountains, keep an eye out for Jill, I guess. Now, she will be pretty easy to spot. She's about 7 feet tall and Vietnamese, and she most likely has broken legs or some kind of broken, an assortment of broken ligaments on her body. At the time of the fall, she was wearing brown hiking boots, blue jean shorts. Now, I did tell her to wear pants in case she brushed up against poison ivy, but she didn't listen. So maybe look for someone with broken legs and poison ivy on those broken legs. She was also wearing a white tank top. She had a red and black plaid flannel and was also wearing a big sun hat. And if you do happen to spot her out somewhere out in the wild, please reach out to the PA State Police, or better yet, please email me at allaboutheeggpodcast@gmail.com. And to Jill, I know the chances are slim, but if you're still alive and listening, please come home. I miss you terribly, and I forgot the password to the Wi-Fi. And if you're somehow listening from beyond the grave, I know you're in a better place and wish you the best. Thanks for everything. Thanks for your service. Now, on the plus side, ladies, if I guess for the time being I'm single, I'll admit this is still a bit of a tender time for me, but I guess the love bug must be hungry because he keeps on biting my bottom. So I suppose if you're interested in getting to know me further, send me an email. Just make sure you include a headshot and your professional resume, and I'll sort through the options and hopefully find myself a suitor. Now, I should add that in your email, you should write egg lover in the subject line so I don't get confused with any emails with potential leads about Jill, who at the moment is not declared dead. She's just technically missing. And again, to the ladies, if you are a potential suitor, please send your inquiries to allaboutheeggpodcast@gmail.com. So I guess our little Dean Martin excerpt in the beginning of this episode is pretty applicable to the way my life is going these days. Nothing beats an egg and a kiss, but unfortunately I only have one of those right now on account of the potential death of my girlfriend Jill and the unfortunate murdering of my ex-wife. But, you know, please feel free to reach out, and I look forward to hearing from all the eggheads out there. So anywho, I think I've rambled on enough about the horrors that have been going on lately. And I got to tell you, I have been looking really forward to just kicking back, unwinding, and just talking about eggs for a bit. Just getting my mind off all the bullshit. And there has been no shortage of bullshit in my life. So I thank eggs for that. So anywho, let's get back to it here on All About the Egg. It's going to be the spiciest episode we've had yet by far. And I got to tell you, if you've got any dire egg questions, they're probably going to be answered here today. Only here on All About the Egg. Begin our adventure into egg grading and this whole process by going over a little bit of history about the USDA, or as it's officially known, the United States Department of Agriculture. So just a little background. It was formed in 1862 under my favorite president, Abe Lincoln, and it achieved presidential cabinet status in 1889. Now, Lincoln referred to the USDA in his final message to Congress as the People's Department, because at the time about half the population in the United States lived on farms. Now, prior to this point, the government had been trying to import more diverse seeds and animals in hopes to begin farming them, and to make a long story short, they eventually set up a government department, the USDA, to help and aid that. Now, it was originally part of the Department of the Interior, but eventually was allowed to form its own separate department. And its original task was in regards to agriculture, rural development, aquaculture, and human nutrition in the most general and comprehensive sense of those terms. It was upgraded to cabinet status in 1889. And obviously it still continues to this day and currently heads 8 distinct tasks: farm production and conservation, food nutrition and consumer services, food safety, marketing and regulatory programs, natural resources and the environment, research, education, and economics, and trade and foreign agricultural affairs. Now, we'll mainly be focusing on the Food Safety Agency of the USDA, otherwise known as the Food Safety and Inspection Services, abbreviated as FSIS. And that was actually only formed on March 14th of 1977, so relatively recently. Now, Congress passed the Egg Products Inspection Act in 1970, which gave the USDA authority to inspect and sort the eggs according to their standards and to discard any trouble eggs. It also gave the USDA authority to inspect egg production facilities to ensure that they're using proper sanitary procedures and grading procedures in their egg production. Now, this all came after a wide variety of technological improvements and in egg production, and as it became sort of more commercial rather than the family farms providing most of the local eggs. As it became more commercial and, you know, you started seeing larger quantities of eggs for sale in stores. So now let's get into a little bit about physical egg grading. Now, just as a note, most of the information I've gathered here has come from a 50-page document, the Egg Grading Manual by the USDA. I've found this on their website. You can actually just Google Egg Grading Manual, and I think it's the first thing that pops up. It is 50 pages, and I've read each one of these pages. It's chocked very full of information about all things egg grading. There's information on how to become a grader, a little bit about the history of egg grading and certification in the United States. It's a very informative document, and I highly recommend it if you're interested in learning more about this. What we're going to do here is basically just give a rough overview about the process of egg grading, of USDA certified egg grading. So we probably, just for time's sake, won't get too into the nitty-gritty of things, the science of things, but like I said, that information is available in the egg grading manual. So now before we get into the actual process of grading, we have to break down the different parts of the chicken's egg. Now, as you're probably well aware, the egg will come with a shell. It'll have the yolk, which, if the egg would be fertilized, would be the thing that feeds the baby chick its proper nutrients. There's also the vitellin membrane, which surrounds the yolk and helps to keep the yolk separated from the whites. We also have an air cell located at the fat end of the egg. Now, there's no air cell in the egg when it's laid. It comes out of the chicken's bottom, according to the USDA's egg grading manual, at about 105 degrees Fahrenheit, with no air cell. But as the egg cools, everything, all the liquids in the egg, contract a little bit and pull away from the shell, just a hair, and this creates a small air cell. We also have the albumen, which are also known as the egg whites. And there are four parts of the egg whites. There's the thick albumen, the outer thin and inner thin albumen. And there's also what's known as the chalaza, which is basically a tissue that's used to suspend the yolk in the center of the egg white. Now this is, sometimes you can see it on the egg. It's sort of like a white stringy chunk that's attached to the yolk. The last thing we'll go over, last part of the egg, are the inner and outer membranes which surround the albumen. Now, USDA egg grading is broken down to a number of different factors, but we'll start with the two most basic. There's exterior and interior grading. Now, the most notable thing, starting out with exterior, is the shell color. Now, I'm sure you know, there are white eggs and there are brown eggs. People certainly have their preferences, thinking one might be more nutritious than the other or provide different health benefits. But those beliefs don't really have much of a basis. The nutritional value of both shell colors is pretty similar for the most part. Now, brown-shelled eggs are actually a bit tougher to grade, as it's a little bit harder to see the interior of the shell and catch imperfections within the egg. But generally, different colors of eggs are graded the same way. They'll inspect cleanliness, they'll look for leakers or dented eggs, and discard them accordingly. Now, they usually do this in the process known as hand candling. This is usually when they just hold the egg in their hand and inspect the exterior for these blemishes or imperfections. They'll also look for the thinness of a shell, where if an unbroken shell has a thin spot that won't stand up to normal handling, it won't be used for consumer consumption, but will likely be discarded or used for other things. Interior inspection of the egg is done with another form of candling, like we talked about before in the, I believe, the first episode, where they actually run the egg over a light and they can inspect its innards. Now, just a note, if the egg is improperly cared for, the egg quality can totally deteriorate between inspection and consumption. But if they handle the eggs properly, then they can minimize the change in quality over time. This can be anything from humidity-controlled environments or temperature-controlled environments, and obviously rough handling as well, can totally deteriorate the quality of an egg between the time that it's graded and you buy it at the store. So some things that they'll inspect when they're looking for the interior. Firstly, they'll look at the air cell. Now, like I said before, chickens' eggs don't have air cells right out of their bottoms. But once the egg is laid and cools down, the liquids contract, and the inner shell membrane separates from the outer membrane and will form a small airspace. Now, the size of this airspace is a factor in determining the quality of an egg and will bump the grade up or down accordingly. But basically, the smaller the air cell, the higher the quality. They'll also look at the yolk. The thickness and consistency of the white will have an effect on the quality of the yolk. If the white is too thin, the yolk will have a better chance of moving towards the shell and possibly breaking while it's still inside the egg. Yolks that are too oddly shaped may also bump the egg grade down accordingly. And additionally, if they have any dark spots, or also known as germ development, if they are present in the egg yolk, they will be discarded as they are no good for consumption. They can also be present as irregular deposits of lighter or darker yolk. And if they detect any blood spots in the egg, it must be discarded as it's not edible. Now, a top quality yolk may present a few defects on its surface. It might be slightly enlarged, but it can't show any germ development or blood spots. Otherwise, it will be discarded. Now, egg whites are graded by viscosity and clarity. Viscosity, like we talked about before, if they're too thin, the yolk will have a better chance of moving towards the shell and possibly breaking while it's still inside the egg. And the clarity refers to blood spots, which may be present on the yolk or perhaps infused with the white. And if they see these blood spots, they toss them out, toss them in the trash. And the clearer the egg, the higher the grade. So we know they'll be discarded if there are any presentations of large blood spots or discoloration, but they'll also throw out these eggs if they're rotten, if they see any chicken embryos or signs of potential development within the egg, or any foreign materials. They'll also discard the eggs if they're musty. Now, these musty eggs will have all the characteristics of a good quality egg, but they have a musty odor. Now, this can be a result of the nesting material the egg is using, or bacteria found in the egg. They'll also throw out moldy eggs. Now, the mold might be present on the shell of an egg if they wash it with dirty water or store it in a high humidity area. The mold might even actually penetrate the egg, and in extreme cases might cause the egg to rot prematurely. Now, the types of feed, interestingly enough, that chickens consume can also greatly affect the flavor of the eggs they lay. According to the USDA, according to the Egg Grading Bible, as far as I'm concerned, high concentrations of fish oil or garlic fed to chickens can impart their flavor to the eggs. And additionally, eggs that are exposed to strong odors after they've been laid, they might actually absorb them, and that could slightly affect the flavor of the egg. Now, the USD notes odors like kerosene, mold, must, and fruits and vegetables might find their way into its flavor. And this is why it's extremely important to store eggs in a climate and humidity-controlled environment away from any potential odorous contaminants. So now you know a bit of what they're looking for when they're grading a good egg. Now, there are three different types of consumer-grade eggs that you might find in the store. There is AA, and these are used for dishes where the appearance of the egg is crucial. They're free from defects, and the shell is clean and unbroken. And these, being a higher grade, are slightly more expensive. The next down is the A, single A grade, which are a little bit more versatile and suitable for most cooking and baking needs. These are most appropriate when the egg is being mixed into a dish, like in baking or maybe like an egg wash. There may be a little bit more defects present than AA eggs, but they are still safe to consume. The lowest grade of consumer-grade eggs is B. These are used mostly for liquid, frozen, and dried egg products. They might have more thinner or misshapen or oddly textured shells. They generally might have more visual defects, but they are still safe to consume. And these eggs are also graded by size. We have jumbo, extra large, medium, small, and peewee. I like that peewee size. I don't think I've ever seen a peewee egg in a store, but if I did, I'd probably laugh. And in the United States, at least, the most common sizes of these eggs sold in stores are medium, large, and extra large. So now that we've broken down egg grading, let's get into a little bit about how you can actually become an egg grader. Now, originally, companies would have to pay a fee to the USDA on like a voluntary basis to apply to have a USDA-licensed egg inspector come out and basically be what they call a resident inspector at the plant. Now, only the plants with resident USDA-licensed inspectors could label their product as USDA-graded. Companies can also request a temporary egg inspector if they have a particular lot of eggs that they need inspected, or if they have like a surge in production and require more hands. Now, if you yourself are interested in becoming a USDA-licensed egg inspector, I found out there actually exists what's known as the National Egg Quality School. Now, this is basically a four-day camp that provides everything there is to know about egg grading. They do lectures, they do individual instruction, and they also do a laboratory experience that teaches you how to properly inspect eggs. You get like a hands-on four-day course all about this. They also provide on-site training provided by some poultry programs that provide on-location training and certifications specific to what the producers need. Now, I'd say if you're interested in becoming a certified egg inspector, just from listening to this podcast, you're probably already steps ahead of the normal person. If you're interested in learning some more information about the egg school, or perhaps want to pick apart more information about the egg, like I said, you can look up the egg grading manual provided by the USDA on their website, and that's what I use to gather most of the information we've gone over so far. Now, this thing is basically the egg Bible, and I strongly recommend it if you're still hungry for more information. I say there's 50 pages, but I don't think 50 pages are enough. Okay, I know what you're saying. Brett, you just gave me some of the most groundbreaking information I've ever received about egg grading in my entire life. I'm crying from how joyous I am to have learned so much information about the USDA egg grading procedures. But I learned so many wonderful facts about eggs, my brain is just scrambled. Well, I hear ya. I know where you're coming from. The nice thing about this is you can always rewind if there's something you missed or want to hear again. And I know I kind of threw a lot at you, but I believe now it's time we unwind a little bit. Next up, I'd like to bring on a very special guest who is nice enough to take the time out of his day to chat with me about something we both love dearly. His name is Mike, and he's a professional egg chef who I got to know through my girlfriend Jill. They actually work in the same kitchen together, but Mike uses the eggs a little bit differently than Jill, and I can't wait to hear all about it. So, without further ado, here's Mike. Egg fans and eggheads alike, I'm here lucky enough to have been able to wrangle myself an interview with a real-life egg professional. His name is Mike, and funnily enough, he actually works at the same place as my girlfriend Jill. Hello, Mike. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Brett. How are you?
Oh, I can't complain. At least not too bad right now. So it's already been established that you work in the kitchen with my girlfriend, Jill. Can you tell me a bit about what you do with the business?
Well, I kind of do a little bit of everything. Do some ordering, do the dishes when needed, you know, mainly, cook the food, order the food, send the food out.
And you do a bit of, like every meal, right? Breakfast, lunch, and dinner?
Yeah, for sure. We run a brunch. We're open for lunch and dinner, so full spectrum.
Now, can you tell me roughly about how many eggs you use throughout the day?
Well, that would depend on the day. On a regular, a Tuesday? I would say that depends. Me personally or us as a whole?
As a whole, I suppose.
As a whole? It depends. I would say somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe like 5 dozen, I would say, on a normal day, you know, with the bakery goods that we've got going on. And, some of the specials, yeah.
5 dozen a day.
I'd say like maybe around that. Yeah, there's a lot of egg washes, eggs in doughs, and other baked goods. Jill would actually probably be using most of those. For us, just cooking, I would say maybe a half dozen.
Per day, that's impressive.
Yeah, except for our brunch. Our brunch, I would say that's at least, I would say brunch, we probably burn through like easy, like 7 dozen on a busy day, depending on the specials, sometimes more. And that includes like using them for omelets. Somebody orders sunny side up, scrambled, eggs benedict, you know.
So now, you yourself, how long have you been with the business?
I've been in the business, I'd say, about 20 years.
20 years. How did you start working there?
Well, where I currently work or just in food service?
Where you currently work?
Working in restaurants for a little while and decided to, settle down and, get a job where I could actually get some benefits, and not work till midnight. It's a bonus.
I know how that goes with my last job. So you've been there quite a while, as established. Have you noticed any trends in the egg dishes that you cook, or have they stayed relatively consistent throughout your time there?
I'd say the amount of things that people order kind of depend on a couple of factors. They're not a big fan of, maybe a Western omelet, but like if you just did ham and cheese, I will be standing at that stove making omelets all day. That's usually a pretty hot seller. Scrambled eggs is actually probably like the next one I would say is pretty crazy. That's been pretty consistent since we've been running a brunch. Eggs Benedict is one of those ones that kind of goes in waves. It depends. Sometimes we run it with like a crab cake instead of the Canadian bacon, and those will sell pretty well sometimes. For the most part, I think people like the standard one a little bit better with the Canadian bacon, but we sell pretty consistently, I'd say. We sell pretty many of those, and scrambled eggs and omelets. That's the those are the strong ones. Sometimes when we do like frittatas, not so hot. If you do a crab and asparagus quiche, forget about it. Those are selling like hotcakes.
That sounds good.
Those are kind of our big to-dos, I'd say.
That's very interesting. Now, can you tell me, lastly, the very last question, and this is the most important. This is dire. I might say this is dire. Now, picture yourself on a Sunday morning. It's a beautiful spring morning. You wake up fresh out of bed and you say to yourself, I am hungry for some eggs, an egg dish. Can you tell me What are you going to make? What is your absolute favorite way of making eggs at home?
Oh, man. Well, I have to say that I'm kind of a sucker for just the good old Lancaster County dippy egg. You know? You got to get the toast buttered just right, a little bit of salt, and salt, pepper on those eggs. Dunk it in there. Golden. I would say that's what I usually go for. Either that or scrambled. But I would have to say the dippy eggs is the that's the winner for me.
Well, I got to say, that just kind of got me hungry for eggs, even though it's 5:28 p.m. But Sunday morning's coming. Sunday morning's coming. Well, Mike, I thank you for coming here on the podcast on All About the Egg to talk a little shop and to talk a little bit about eggs.
Of course, it's good to be here.
Thank you very much. Well, egg fans, I can't tell you how wonderful this episode was to make. We got to talk a bit of shop with a real egg professional, and also got to unravel something I've been very eager to learn more about, USDA egg grading. I hope you'll join me next time, as we'll be going over all things in regards to nutritional benefits of eggs, and different things that you can incorporate to your recipes to make eggs more healthy. We'll also have an extra special interview with a very prominent figure that I'm sure you all know, but I won't go and spoil it too early. More information in regards to official egg grading procedures and policies can be found at www.usda.gov, and any personal questions or potential information about the whereabouts of my girlfriend Jill can be sent to allaboutheeggpodcast@gmail.com. And ladies, don't forget to send those headshots and resumes. Thank you so much for listening and supporting. I'll see you next time on All About the Egg.